Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. Someone must know the search for missing people and lost identities has been described as gripping and compassionate, heartrending but utterly uplifting. It is a new book by Dave Grimstead, founder of Locate International, picking up maybe where the police, when the trail have gone cold. Delighted to say that joining me live on the line now from the UK is the author of Someone Must Know, Dave Grimstead himself. Dave, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Now, for those who don't know, just explain a little bit about your background and a little bit about what Locate International actually is.
So I worked in policing for just over 30 years. I was a senior investigator, and we always had those cases that we never solved, that we're still looking for that answer to. And one of those examples was the case of Melanie Hall, who disappeared in Bath. I worked on that as a detective, and we never found any answers for the family. But what I came to realise after I retired, there are just so many people that are still searching for answers for long-term missing persons cases. So nearly 13,000 in the UK, there's about 200, for example, in Devon and Cornwall. These are families still waiting for answers, and the police are pressed for the resources to be able to apply the time to reviewing these cases. So the simple idea is that we bring specially trained volunteers. They can work alongside the police and families to try and find answers at no cost to families, at no cost to the police. And the idea really started from watching the RNLI go out one day in St Ives in Cornwall, train specialist volunteers going out there to do the search and rescue. If we could just take that same concept, apply it to those cases of long-term missing, and see if we can find some answers.
Because the thing that strikes me is A, the sheer weight of numbers here. 200 missing in Devon and Cornwall alone. Because we live in a world, don't we, where thankfully the most of us will come into, the closest that most of us will come into negotiate or interactions with the police is probably by watching TV. And if you watch, you know, everybody always finds the missing person on the TV screens, within 40 minutes normally. And of course, real life isn't like that. But the sheer number of people who go missing and that horrendous, the Americans call it, don't they, closure. But that horrendous feeling of not knowing is the most awful.
Certainly the families that we talk to describe that pain of not knowing if everything's been done that could be done in that case. Sometimes there are things that they felt that could be done, and sometimes it's capacity, and we can bring volunteers together. And I've been amazed by the number of people who are willing to volunteer. We've got over 200 volunteers across the UK, aged 18 to 77. We've got police, former police officers. We've got social workers, journalists, lawyers, people you wouldn't normally put into a room together to work, actually just come together for that purpose of trying to find answers and do it as a voluntary effort.
I suppose one of the things about Locate is the fact that it's not for the glory hunters, is it? It's not the people who, the amateur sleuths or presumably you vet these people before you let them loose, because I imagine there's an awful lot of, you only need to go online and see the number of people who, whenever somebody goes missing, I'm just thinking of that awful case of the woman who died, who went missing next to the riverbank, and was it last summer or summer before? Mm. And within seconds, you have conspiracy theories, you have what ifs, you have, all sorts of people getting involved who shouldn't get involved. And obviously, you don't want to let people off the loose and running around like that, Dave, do you?
No, these are trained volunteers who go for a rigorous training program to review the cases. They're vetted. But what I do like about it is the fact that they can bring the diversity of their work experience. These are people with skills that they developed in industry and in other organizations that can easily be applied and adapted to review an investigation. A lot of major crime work is around organization and making sure things are done when they should be done, and bringing that team together. And you've got people who have done that for decades in different industries. So why not give people an opportunity to do this in a structured way so they can contribute to trying to find answers?
I suppose, and if you're a serving police officer who maybe is, and I'm not going down that sort of hoary old Hollywood route, but, you know, with that one case that always evaded them, just because you've retired from the force doesn't mean that you can't still, you shouldn't just think, okay, I'll get my clubs out of the attic now and then spend the rest of my time on the golf course. I mean, you want to be, it must be, of all the jobs to walk away from, I'd imagine, Dave, and you would know this having done it, as a serving officer on the police force, that must be the hardest to walk away from, because there will always be things happening in the background that you were working onto the day that your tenure came to an end, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, I remember working with the police in Germany. So Joachim, who's a retired detective in Lower Saxony in Germany, he had that same case, and we describe it in the book. He's probably the equivalent of me. It was just like looking in the mirror when I'm looking across, and he had that one case as he's coming out to retirement that he has not been able to resolve. So he was looking for ways that work could continue, that, you know, with all the other priorities that go on with the police service, it's not always the capacity or the finance to go back and revisit these cases. So he reached out, and we brought teams together from across Europe and the UK to start reviewing this case, and it's still there. We haven't solved that one. Sometimes there are not those neat endings, but one day, you know, in 3 or 4 years' time, somebody may pick up the digital trail from that case and find us an answer. And Joachim is still waiting for that answer. He's been working on that case for decades.
And the thing is, again, this is pan-European, isn't it? It's not just within the British Isles. This is a case that, these are cases that can, in many cases, have threads that go across the continent, as it were.
Yeah, you just need to look at the work on Interpol recently with the Identify Me campaign and the success that they've had with that. But there are thousands of other cases that are not there in the media at the moment, that maybe with that review work we can find answers. So in the book we talk about Kensington Man, and Vincent was a young man who died on the streets of London, anonymous. You just read the paper and it was article just describing somebody as a vagrant who's frozen to death on the street. But when we started investigating that case, there wasn't much to work with. But then when we find his identity, learning about his life and speaking to the people who knew him before he was on the streets, and being able to go back to his best friend who he grew up with in Clapham and provide that answer as to what happened to his friend, there's always those people who still want the answers and still feel connected to that person.
Also, we talk about thinking out of the box, but, you know, I was looking through, you'd see retired detective inspectors, forensic experts, you know, professors, this, that, and the other. Vintage clothes experts. Now, that pulled me up. So how would you bring a vintage clothes expert, David, into the fold of Locate? How does that particular one pertain to a case?
I think that they bring the research skills and be able to look at the types of clothing. In the North Seaman case, they were able to work with the archive of Marks and Spencer's to really investigate the label on the clothing that was there. And I think there's just so many people with extraordinary interests. We had a Wembley Point woman case that we talk about in the book. There was a carrier bag with CPNY on the side. It was in London. We thought Central Park, New York was the obvious place to go. But this lady had collected thousands and thousands of carrier bags, catalogued them, and she was able to tell us that was actually a particular news agent's in North London, and we were able to go there. We thought it was Central Park, New York. She had the answers, and we were able to find the people who sold that particular bag.
When you actually put these pieces all together and come up with you find out what happened, I mean, what's the next step? I mean, you don't go running over there and go, aha, j'accuse. Or, I mean, how does it operate when you actually finally put that final piece? I mean, apart from the immense satisfaction, but again, I talked about closure before. What's the final piece, Dave?
For families, it's often finding the answers. But we work collaboratively with the police to follow up those cases. We never approach the family direct. We'll either work with the coroner or we'll work with the police service to make that approach. But I just think there's so many opportunities. I've been inspired by the people willing to give their time. I mean, we talk about society and there's kind of, everything's bad news when you go online, but people who are prepared to give their time and make somebody else's problem their problem and try and find that answer. I think there are thousands of people out there prepared to do that type of thing. In the future, it might not be just missing persons. It might be something else. But people want to give something back, and they don't always want to give money or give something else. They actually want to give their time and experience and skills to try and help. We've got a great media team. We've got people that are former journalists, current journalists. And honestly, sometimes they come to us to volunteer because day-to-day work doesn't give you the opportunities sometimes to follow those cases in depth that you'd like to, because you're always moving on to the next task that's being given to you.
Well, here's a controversial thing, and I know it's going to upset many people, but you know, I'm of the idea that basically, intrinsically, people are very, very good. I mean, I know you might go on social media and go, "Oh, for goodness sake, we're all fighting each other and the whole bit," and call each other nasty names on the internet, on X or Twitter, or it's cool these days. But actually, when it comes down to it, you know, we are all intrinsically good people.
And that's I've met so many good people doing great things and prepared to just give their time in it. It's because they're quiet about it. They don't make that much noise. But yeah, you're right. There are so many people prepared to give their time for a good cause. And, you know, you build up years and years of experience, don't you, in different industries. And we've got, for example, we've got an A&E consultant who's now retired but teaches A&E medicine. They started out their career as an A&E doctor, researching railway deaths, because that was predominantly some of the things that were coming into the hospital. And they're currently researching that area of work for us around unidentified people found on railway tracks.
How did you pick the books that pick the stories to go into? And it's a collection of stories then, basically, the Someone Must Know.
Yeah, so what we really wanted to do was tell the story of the people that were mainly those that were unidentified, but also tell the story of the volunteers that are workers. So you can follow the investigation through the eyes of the person who's working through that case. And the reality is you don't always find answers. So there's not always a neat closure at the end of each chapter. But each chapter tells the story of two cases and follows teams of volunteers as they work through that process of trying to find answers.
What are you hoping? I mean, what was thus far the story that gave you perhaps the greatest sense of satisfaction, when you thought that nobody could work this one out?
Well, I think Vincent, because we started purely with a small paragraph in a newspaper describing somebody who was a vagrant dying on the streets of Kensington, we didn't think we'd find that answer. The case of James Brennan that we've been working on, went missing in 1975. Didn't think we'd find those answers, but the answers are there. We're currently working on a case at the moment from 1954 where we're about to find the answer to that case. And often it's not, I mean, science has made a huge difference in terms of, you know, we're able to use things like forensic oceanography, mapping the tides to try and find where a body might be found and tracked back as to where it may have come from. We're able to do facial reconstructions, working with scientists who can rebuild the face from a skull. But sometimes it's the simple thing that those answers are in the files. They're old files. Sometimes they're not digitized. But those answers have been in there. And it's a bit like a library with a book that's just never been taken off the shelf. If somebody just takes it off the shelf, there might be that answer there. And we know 1954, we're just about to resolve that. 1975, 1996, the answers are there. It just needs the capacity to be able to do that research.
And presumably a pair of fresh eyes on something from 1954. I mean, they may have been stressed. You know what, police work is hard enough now. Hard enough, and that's in a computer age. Imagine trying to solve a crime in 1953, 54, with all those index files and, you know, massive amounts of the pre-digital age. So, you know, it could have been an overworked or harassed police officer or office or department able to sort of miss that thing which was sitting there glaring in front of you, Dave.
I think so. I worked on a lot of murder inquiries, and you've always got the resources to follow. You know, if there's a red car mentioned with a partial index, you can follow thousands of those to get to the answer. But the reality is, if there's no crime, and sometimes the majority of missing persons aren't a crime, and majority of unidentified people are not a crime, there's not the resources to pursue that. So if we can relieve that burden from the police to conduct that review work, we're saving them hundreds of hours of work that they can then apply to those more critical cases that they could be focusing on.
We're talking about, you talked about people, you know, oceanographers and reconstructing faces from skulls. This, how are you financing this? How is this being, you know, how is this being paid for? Presumably because, I mean, these people give up their time, you know, very valiantly, and we salute them for that, but there are costs incurred, obviously, Dave.
Some of our forensic experts have given their time. So they'll give their time to review these cases and find those answers. We've just finished some work in Manchester where some really top experts in geoforensics have done all the survey work for us. They gave their time for free. They found the people to do the work. They went out and did the work. They found that answer. And now, that's a case from 1951, I think, they've been working on it. So, but they give their own time. In due course, if we need to raise money for certain forensic work, then we can do that. I think the big advantage is our whole organisation are volunteers. I'm a volunteer. I've been a volunteer for six, seven years. Everyone is a volunteer. So any finance that we raise goes directly to that case to try and find those answers.
And presumably the book as well is going to put money back into the system, obviously, which is the reason we've written,
Get out there and buy the book because all the proceeds go to charity. So, not one penny comes to me or somebody else in the organisation. So all of that money, other than obviously the bit that goes to Penguin,
sure,
would come to us in terms that enable us to do more investigations. So, get out there and buy it.
Right then, listeners, here's your chance then. So, first of all, go to the TRE website, which is tre.radio. Click on the virtual bookstore. You cannot miss the front cover. It is rather brilliant, I must say. Someone Must Know is the book, The Search for Missing People and Lost Identities. Dave, how can people find, locate in the international online, and presumably they can donate if they wish to as well? How can they get in touch with you, and how can they find out more of the fantastic work that you do?
Google Locate International Missing People, and it'll come up on the top of your search results. Have a look at the website. You may have the answer to some of the cases that are there, or you may know or have a connection to somebody who might help us find answers. So, go online, Locate International, Missing Persons, and then you can find out all the information there.
The book is called Someone Must Know, The Search for Missing People and Lost Identities. It is by Dave Grimstead, founder of Locate International. Dave, it has been wonderful to speak to you today. That has completely blown my mind with some of the stuff that you have coming there. To solve cases going back to the mid-50s when you think they would have been done and dusted, or just that one person, that Vincent, and to bring closure to his friends, it's just fabulous work. Dave Grimstead, founder of Locate International, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.